it's always never too late for being in being on the HF radio to make a few good contacts on HF, because the band's been doing pretty good lately on, you know, also on 12 meters. Sometimes every now and then I go on 12 meters and I get it an opening just in time for closers, because 12 meters isn't open all the time, you know. I think because the propagation, the conditions, and the conditions, and the how the band's going to open up as long as it does. But sometimes you got your bands on 12 meters, sometimes you don't. You just got to get there at the same time when it's open, that's all. And sometimes I get there when it is open. But that, and times I just check to see, and sometimes not open, though. Then I go back to 20 meters, and then I make a few contacts on there. But I use an ICOM 738 radio. It's an old radio. Someone sold it to me years ago. His name was Chuck. And I have to admit, it's doing very well for me all the years I've been using it. And I'm talking to you from my apartment. I'm using a J-Po, as I said earlier. And anyways, and also my wife has a few relatives in Lansing. I'm not sure if it's East Lansing, but she has a few relatives in Lansing. Anyways, the signal's doing really well. Man, I mean, from Lansing, it's doing pretty good. Well, this is a leak of repeater. That's why it does so good, because you can hear somebody so clear. I mean, it's like you can hear you, like, in the next block. That's how clear you are right now.
Oh, yeah, the repeater and how high it's off the ground, and it makes a big difference. I also got one of them little Baofeng HTs, but I like the Radtail. The Radtail seems to do me pretty good. It seems to have a better receive end on it. From what I've been studying on there too, it's better on the Spurious and Harmonix than the Baofeng. So I got the Radtail because I don't want to be generating any kind of harmonics. That's a problem that, you know, I always make sure that there's not an issue with, if I can. So I want to be as clean as I can on the transmit, KO4ROY for ID.
You have a four in your car, so you must have originally came from Florida, is that correct?
No, I got my license in Virginia. I was in Hampton, Virginia. Got my license in 2021. It was around June of 2021. I got my tech, and then November of 2021, I got my general. I studied and got my general, so I could, operate the HF, because I was very interested in that. So, yeah, I was very proud to get that. I had to study for quite a few years before I got it, but, you know, that year I was determined to study and get the license, and I got it, and I'm very happy to have it. I'm very happy to be able to, you know, work on the ham bands.
Well, you're doing well, I tell you what, I have to admit, as long as I've been a ham, and I've been enjoying the hobby ever since, and I tell you, I had to say this much, it's been fun, and I get on the bands on the HF rig as much as well on 2 meters. And I've had my experiences on 6 meters, too, the Batsheet band, they call it. I have a 6-meter rig, it's a TS-60 all-bolt transceiver, and it's a wonderful rig. I mean, I have not hooked it up in the apartment because it might cause a lot of interference, and they might know where it's coming from, so I try to keep it, like, very low profile about situations like that. So preventing problems in the apartment here from interfering in anybody's TV or the radio when they're playing, when they're hearing their radio like FM and AM, you know, and you don't want to disturb any attendants about hearing about that when I'm transmitting on HF, on 6 meters. I used to have a halo antenna for 6 meters on top of my car, and I go to this park all the time, and someone always, everybody or somebody, every time I go to the park in the summertime, they look at the antennas when it's wiggling back and forth. they kind of look at it for them. They get the impression, what the heck would that be, you know?
Yeah, Roger on that. Did you say your name was Don? I thought that's what you said your name was.
Roger, that. I was going to ask your name again. I forgot myself. Yeah, the name is Don. That's correct.
Sorry, Don. Yeah, it's pretty interesting because the gentleman that got me into ham radio when I was in Virginia, his name was Don, too, KJ4MZ. That was his call. And a very nice guy. And I had the pleasure of doing field day when I got my license. And I got to use the station call when I first got my tech, and I got to use the station call so I could work HF, and of course that really got me hooked on it. Of course, I was always hooked on HF anyway. I was a CB'er back in the 70s and stuff, and I had friends that were hams. Actually, my Uncle Mike was a ham, and he got me hooked on HF too. Way back, so I've always been interested. So it was just a matter of continuing to study to get the license. And the math for me was the hard part, you know. And there was a few things like that, and being able to see the schematics and learning what the transistors look like and stuff like that. Once I was able to do that, I was able to pass the test and everything, and I was so happy. I remember, actually, I did better on my general test than I did on the tech. I got 100% on the general, so I was quite pleased.
Yeah, very good there. Yeah, that's awesome. Good for you. I don't know how long you've been a ham, but anyway, I've been a ham as long as I can remember since I took my test is when I did. And I didn't think it was going to pass because it was so complicated. You look at the questions, kind of freeze on you, you know. And then I looked at the question I did, and I didn't pass it the first time with it by technician. I had to take the class for 2 weeks until I took my technician test. And I had frozen. I had to say, nope, I'm going to go back and do it again, you know. And I did it. I passed it with flying colors, and got 75, 70, I think you had to get 75%, or yeah, I think it was there, like you said. I think it was 75% or more than that, I'm not sure, like you said then. But I had passed it, and then I went up from that to my Morse Cole. I passed that, but I flunked it the first time. They were at the Salvation Army in Mount Clemens at the time when they were taking their tests back in the day. And I had took my Morse Cole test there, and I said, well, I'm going to go back and see if I could try it again. So I did it the second time and tried again. I passed the Morse Cole 5 words a minute, and then I passed by the general not too long after that.
Yeah, Roger on that. That's the same as with me, too. The they did the test in the Marshall Street Armory. It was the Armory in Virginia. I'm always thinking of Marshall Street because they have that in Lansing, but I forget what they call it down there, but I got it when I was down there, and I was so happy about it. I tell you, I was on the air in no time with that. Got my station set up, and I did a little, until I got my general, I was able to do some 10-meter HF because techs are allowed to work from 28,300 to 28,500, I think it is. So I had a chance to do that, and, you know, of course, now being the general, I can do the entire 10-meter band. So, but it was good. It was really good, and I had some good folks at the ham club that kind of helped me along. So thanks to them, you know, I couldn't have done it without that. And watching a lot of the YouTube, this guy North, I think he's in the Carolinas, was it W4EEY or something like that? I think his name was Gary, but anyway, he had online classes where he talked about the, you know, all the theory and all that. So I watched the videos, and I did the practice test on QRZ.com, and just kept doing it, kept plugging away until I got it.
Well, you know, it takes persistency is what it is, and you pursue something you can do, you determine you get it done, you know, pass your test. So that's the knowledge I can understand for myself, because I don't quit. I just keep on doing it, and I just keep on doing it because I'm that persistent to get it done. And if it doesn't work the first time, and I could try something else, you know, by looking in the book and reading enough of it for pass by technician, which I did pass by technician because I had to read the book, you know, and that book really helped a lot because the guy at Eureka Club, I used to belong to Eureka Club, they deal with emergencies, and his name was Walt. He highlighted some of the answers that he highlighted that I had to read, so for me, in order to pass that test, I had to read those highlighted answers before I had passed my test. I literally just read every day until I had passed that definition. I mean, that's how persistent I was. And I knew I was going to pass it after I did read it, that I did pass my test by technician, you know. So you can do anything you want. You're determined to do anything you want, my friend. You can do anything you want. You have no problems about passing your technician or your advance or your general, your 5 words a minute, you know. And I now did go as far as my advance because I didn't do that test because it's the floor event was too complicated. It was too many math, and I'm not very good at math. So I just only passed up to my general, and that was all. And the HF rig I use is Icon 738, and I think I mentioned that to you before. But you were saying that you passed your test 100% on your general, or was it like less than that, or what was it? Was it 100% you said?
Roger, it was 100% on the general. There's like 400 questions on the general, and I got them all right. The technician, I didn't miss that many questions, but I didn't get 100% on the tech. But when I did the general, I mean, I wanted to make sure that before I went in to get tested, because I didn't want to flunk. You know, I wanted to go in there and do it right the first time. So I made sure, and I kept studying until with the practice test kept saying I was doing 100%. And then when that happened, I decided to go ahead and go and get tested. That way I knew I had a better chance of passing it. I didn't just go in there willy-nilly and, you know, not do it the right way. So and when I did, I was able to pass with 100% to be sure. But, yeah, you have to get, I think you can only miss, like, 4 or 5 questions. You're not allowed to miss that many of them in order to get the license. I forget what it boils down to, but, yeah, you got to get most of them right. So that's when I went in and did it, and I was so happy when I did it. And I got, of course, when you get your tech, you got to wait till you actually get your call sign. But when you go from tech to general, you get your little certificate until the FCC gets it updated. And, of course, you're allowed to say AG afterwards, and then you can operate the band. So that was good. As soon as I got my general, I went on the HF band and got right on the air and started working contacts, and I was just happy as a lark. K-O-4-R-O-Y.
I think it was like that with me. They called me up on the phone. I'm not sure what the people that helped me. Well, they, one of the, I don't know what they call them, they were like the directors for the, they get the test to you, and then they write their names on your certificate, has your past, has a big antenna on it, and then you have all three names on it, the people that had gave the test to you, okay? Anyways, I think one of them called me up and told me my call sign. As soon as I got my call sign, I got on the air as they did. I think that's how they did it, but they called me. Then I got my license a couple of days later.
Yeah, well, I remember the days when they did it on paper, but you had to, nowadays you had to look online, you know, when you got your tech, you had to look online and wait for the call sign to show up on your cores, I think it was called. You go onto the FCC website, and when your call shows up, then you can operate, but there's no way of knowing until it goes into the database. When you first get your ham license from zero to, you know, ham license. But what's nice is that when you go from tech to general, you're allowed to be a general as soon as you pass. So, yeah, I had three, they're called VEs, yeah. I had three people that tested me. And basically you take the test, you got to do the markings, and then you turn them in, and the guy told me right off the bat, he said, you aced the test. And boy, I'll tell you, I was so happy, man. I went right home and went straight on the air, and I got my equipment. I had to get the equipment first, and then I got straight on the air. It didn't take that long, but I was so happy about it.
Yeah, roger that, and I had to say this much, you know, for myself. All the years I've been a ham operator, back in years ago when I first got my technician test, and I passed that one with flying colors, and I got my first radio, was a 440 UHF. That's before I even got my license. I said, you don't want that radio. You want to go take that back to get the HT202 from your radio shack. And I still had that Sprayberry radio today. And it's not working. It's very old radio, and it's not doing like it's supposed to be doing, because I pushed the wrong button and had some, it's called ear something. It's causing problems because I had pushed the wrong button. I did something I shouldn't have done, I think. I kept on what I did, what was wrong, and it clipped out all the frequencies. Now it's telling me that air, ER, is called air, and it's beeping while I was doing that on the 202, HTX-202. So to my knowledge, I wouldn't know how to get back those frequencies in the program, to program those frequencies back where it was. I think the frequencies are perfectly still in there. You just had to find out how to get back to it, you know, when I had messed up when I did. KCHCPT 4ID. What's your name again? You told me, I forgot.
KCHCPT from KO4ROY. The name here is Troy. Spelled phonetically, Tango, Romeo, Oscar, Yankee. Troy. And I wanted to say, too, as far as your old radio there, if you can get, you might be able to search online and get the manual. I usually search just about any radio. You can find the manual online if you really look. It'll be a PDF file that they put it in. And you might be able to download this manual and read your manual on it, and you'll be able to figure it out. But a radio that's old, that's been sitting around, you may have to recap some of those capacitors. If you're not able to do it, you might have to have someone do it. Some of those electrolytic capacitors kind of dry out, or they kind of start leaking inside the radio, the chemical in there, and that can cause a lot of issues. As I've heard a lot of people say, you let a radio sit around a while, and the capacitors can kind of dry out in them. So that's the problem with that.
I didn't know that to my knowledge, although, you know, as long as I've been a ham, no one never had told me that. Have joined the club with, the people that used to go out to your secret club, you know, told me that information until you told me that now, to Troy. I didn't know it would do something like that, ruin your radio that way, you know, but I'll take up that information and look that up on the computer, although I don't have a laptop or a computer. My laptop years ago, I had one. Someone gave it to me, and it was obsolete. It was an IBM laptop, so I had to toss that away, throw it away. It was no good. I had one of those old computers, and I throw that away. It was no good. So both of them was obsolete because they were not dated, even had it that upgraded to the point that where you can't upgrade kind of computers anymore, because the year wasn't the same year it was when it was that year when you should have updated it because you couldn't do it, you know. But the thing of it is, I just have to get another laptop or a computer. I mean, laptops are very nice to have. You can take it anywhere you want. But I have to get a computer to get that done and find out more about this radio, the ICOM 738. It's an old radio, and like I said earlier, but it does very good. But like you said, it might cause a lot of problems in that, you know, leaking and all that. And I don't want that to happen, you know. I'm very particular about my equipment, and I try to take care of it as best I can.
Yeah, roger on that. Yeah, if it's you know, acting kind of weird, you know, like once you get it programmed, if it's like squealing or not receiving good, then yeah, you may have some capacitors that might need to be redone on it. And then sometimes, surprisingly enough, none of them do get messed up. It just depends. It's kind of a trial and error when it gets that old, but. Usually when you, like a radio in the 80s, like if you had a radio in the 80s or the late 70s, like let's say 79, and it's been sitting around since about then, and you go to power it up, you know, it may fire up, and then again, it may not. And then if it does, the receive might be a little weak or something might be a little bit off on it, and it has to have the capacitors redone on them, and then the radio has to be realigned a little bit and all that, but that's what I was, you know, I've heard people talk about that quite a bit on the ham bands on HF when I listen in. I listen in a lot of the web SDRs, the Kiwi web SDRs. I listen to one out of Cadillac, Michigan. There's one out of Ann Arbor I listen in on, so. I think it's KIWI.org is the website. And you can also download the app for your Android and listen to the hams that way, ham and CB, and you'll even listen to AM broadcast through the web on the web SDR, shortwave. But what was I going to say? Yeah. Very good. Yeah, if you can find the manual online, it might really help you out there as far as programming goes.
Charge of that, Troy. Anyways, hopefully in the future, as long as they have this radio, I've had this radio, the ICOM 738, for a long time now, and I do this. Get on it every occasionally, and sometimes I just listen to the radio. I hear people talking and that when the bands are open, but nothing's open now. I don't hear nobody. Earlier today, I was about 10 o'clock, close to 10 o'clock, was nobody. You couldn't hear nobody. You hear a pin drop about as far as you could hear something like that, you know. But anyways, it's a good radio. It do me well all the years now. Says that somebody I sold to me, that belonged to your secret club. His name was Chuck, and as I said earlier, but anyways, it's a good radio, and I'm impressed with it. You know, it got all these knobs and pushing buttons and whistles and all that, but I just had to be careful when I push the wrong buttons, and I don't want to regret something that I pushed something that I should never push because it might throw something off on the radio, so I'm very careful with it. I really am. And it did do me very well. I'm very satisfied with it, you know. But anyways, I get on you know, a long time ago when 6 million was wide open, I had my dad and mom used to live up north. My dad built this house up north years ago, and he retired and went up, moved up north when he did, right? My mom and dad did. My dad passed away 10 years ago, bless his heart. And he helped me get Ham Radio Shack built downstairs. And he said to me, son, would you like to have a Ham Radio Shack downstairs and me help you out with the antenna? And did make a hole in the ground and put the spin and put a tower and a tower on top of it. Yeah, Dad. I was joking back then. And he's okay. Well, you bought his stuff and I help you then, he says. So he knew all of, the angles about how to do anything about soldering and had a lot of experience doing that, get that done, solder the coax cable to the antenna or he soldered something to the something else he soldered. I don't remember what it was, but he knew how to do the antennas very well. He wasn't no ham, but he knew what he was doing. But the man is a tuned die maker, of my dad's, so he knew a lot in the years that he worked in the tuned die room all his life at General Motors when he did KCCBT.
Oh, very good. Yeah, my dad, when he was alive, he worked at General Motors as well. And he did that for quite a few years. He got to be quality control. But yeah, as far as a good computer goes, I got a Asus Rogue. And it's got like 32 gigabytes of RAM, I think it is. I've got a terabyte hard drive on it. I use it for internet radio. I got a album rock station. We call it WAQM, the Legacy. Our short form, our short website is rebrand.ly/WAQM, and it'll take you to the longer URL. But I do album rock. I play a lot of stuff that not just the hits, but the deep tracks. I did Part 15 AM before with Sequam AM Stereo when I was in Virginia. I transmitted the station on Sequam AM Stereo, and I got quite a few people that was interested in it then. And it was a lot of fun, and loads of fun, man. And, of course, down there, I had a real cool landlord at the time. It's really too bad things worked out the way they did, but anyway. They didn't have a problem with me putting up a 10-foot antenna. I had that station going, and you could hear it about 1.5 to 2 miles on a good car radio, sometimes further. And you ran 100 milliwatts into it. And, yeah, on AM, you got out pretty good. Just 100 milliwatts into a 10-foot monopole. Well, of course, you had the antenna tuning unit. And, yeah, it did quite well. But having a good computer like that helps. You can boot right up and do what you got to do. So, and, of course, you know you can, they got those SDR receivers that you can connect to a computer, too. So being in ham radio, you'll find you're going to need to have a good computer to do a lot of stuff. You can log stuff on, log all your contacts on QRZ.com, and that helps out too. Keep track of your contacts.
Yeah, I used to have a computer years ago. Somebody had donated a computer to me from the club, from Musica Club, and he came over and set me up. Get that set up for me and that, and I got it done and that. So I got on QRZ.com and tell me if the bands are open too. That's what makes it very special. It has specified that. I said, wow. I said, that's pretty good. If it does tell me that, that the bands are open on 6 meters, then I get on 6 meters right away. This is when I was at my parents' house, you know, up north, when they used to live up there, my other wife has sold already because I'm on. My sister lives up there and took care of my dad. My mom. And so my mom and my sister moved back down here, and then my aunt bought a condominium. Anyways, and I got a curious.com, and it tells exactly 6 minutes open. It tells exactly when the guy when it did, too, and all that. And it tells you who is on the fans and who isn't, you know. And so it verified that. I said, well, that's pretty good. So I could get downstairs and got 6 beers, and it told me that was wide open. And I get on there, and the computer was right what it said. It said exactly what it said, and the band was open there. So that helps a lot, too, when you have a computer where the band's open, when you can look at a computer and it tells you that.
Yeah, that's one thing I like about QR, too. It kind of gives you a rough estimate. Of course, with 6 meters, that depends on something that's called sporadic E. When the sporadic E, it usually happens around summertime or springtime, you might get some sporadic E. My Yaesu could do 6 meters, not just FM, I could do sideband on there too. So I could get down on the lower 6 meter frequencies and operate sideband. I was capable of doing that, so that made it nice. I forget what frequency. Nice thing too is you can, if you ever forget the band plan, you can always download the bands for what you're allocated to use and stuff. That's always nice to have handy, in case you ever forget those. I always like to have that sitting next to me just in case, because I, you know, being 62, you know, memory's not as good as it used to be, that's for sure. So having that band chart kind of helps.
Usually does when you have something that, you know, and when you have the right equipment that you could use for the bands and that, so you know exactly where the bands are and the, or the person is talking on that frequency, where you can use that. And exactly where they're coming from and all that, too. It tells you where their state's at, where they're talking from, too, I think, if I'm not wrong. Anyways, long time ago, my dad used to visit a sepia, right? And he used to have it in his truck. When he go home from work, he talked to the guys on a CB, you know, from work and that they used to work with. And I got interested when I got older, and I started with a CB. It's called Maxwell CB, and you can use it as a handheld, or you can convert it into a mobile station if you want to. And I was really happy to have that, because you didn't have to have a license for that, because the license didn't have to have a license for a CB. At the time when I bought that CB, that Maxwell one, and so when I didn't have to worry about getting a license, I heard about the ham radio, and a long time ago when I found out about the Radio Shack, and then I knew I had to have license issued from the FCC, you know, and then I had to take my test to get that. But with the CB, no, you didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, there was only a short time in CB, KO4ROY for ID. There was a short time on CB where you had to have a license, and that was before 1975, 76. They kind of did away with it, the license around that time. And it's pretty much, you know, you buy a radio, you can get on the air. That's pretty much it. And then a lot of people don't like to admit, but they, you know, a lot of people started from CB. That's how I started. I always like to work sideband and use regular names, and plus the sideband was, you know, you could work a lot. I worked a lot of DX. Even back then, I did DX for a lot of people. You know, I mean, that's what made CB fun. I could sit at home and talk to a bunch of stations all over the place, and that's what really got me into the ham stuff, because guys were like, yeah, you know, you like talking long distance like that, you gotta study and get your ham license, then you'll really be able to do something. Shoot, I thought, you know, it was great when I was talking to Jamaica, and a couple of times I talked to England on CB on 11 meters. So, yeah, it 10 meters has kind of the same propagation almost. But that's what got me interested, though. And I kept trying to study it and kept trying to do it, but finally did. But as far as the ICOM radios, yeah, those are awesome radios. I like the 7300. I had a chance to operate that at the ham club. A guy had the ICOM 7300. A nice radio, man. It's got the scope on it, frequency scope, and you can tell what, you know, when you're on the band, you can tell just about where the people are talking on or where people are, and you can go right to those frequencies and operate that way. So it's good stuff, and a lot of fun.
Yeah, KCCTT, right, very good today. And you're talking about the ICOMs. Well, this ICOM 738 HF rig I got, outbound receiver, I had to vent it on the ICOM 738. It does have an augment tuner inside the radio, by the way. I don't have to tune now. That does it by itself. And that's what's nice about the radio, the ICOM 738, because it does that. If you buy a radio that tunes by itself, you did very well. Spend the kind of money, spend a lot of money for something that you have right now, or you maybe would like to have in the future, that this tunes by itself. I'll just push button and it does that on its own when you turn it on. That's what's nice about the radio itself, you know, which I'm very impressed with when it did that. And the guy that sold it to me says, oh, don't worry about tuning that. I said, it tuned by itself, he says, you know.
Yeah, roger on that, Don. Yeah, that's what I like about some of those radios that's got the built-in ATU. If you don't have a built-in ATU, you can always get one. I bought the radio I had, something was wrong with the internal ATU on it. So I bought I bought one of those ATU 100 Pro Plus tuners. And if you get your antenna kind of close to the band, and if it's not, to be honest with you, I took a Antron 99, which is normally a CB antenna, and with the ATU, I was able to go down to 20 meters and get the SWR flat match with the tuner and operate. I did 100 watts out the ASU and made plenty of contacts. Plenty of contacts that way. Might not be the ideal antenna. They kind of call that a compromise because it's not the antenna itself ain't tuned to the band. You're using the tuner to do it, but it works. And someone like me that doesn't have the insight nor the money to have a bunch of antennas, that worked. So with the Antron 99 vertical, Moonraker's got a vertical out, though, that will do all bands. They recommend that you have an antenna tuner or a radio that's got one to get the SWR down to flat, but it's a end-fed vertical antenna, and you don't have to have radios for it. You can if you want to, but you don't have to. And that's what I was thinking. I could take one of them basketball hoop holders, you know, that the kids use, and some of them's got like a little hole at the bottom, and you can put sand in it or gravel in it or something to make it heavy enough to hold. And then I could take the antenna and clamp it onto the pole and put it somewhere when I want to operate. And then when I'm done, I could unclamp the antenna and take the little portable basketball hoop thing down, and nobody knows anything about it. So that might be what I have to do for HF. And then just get one of those 30-amp pyramid power supplies. And I do have a, you know, a Yaesu rig, but I was thinking I was, you know, I was going to try to get something like a Zygu 6100. I seen on YouTube where a guy made that into like an HT. He had to hold it on his side, and it had a BNC connector, and he had a telescopic antenna on it, and the radio's got, I think he hooked it up, no, that one he had to hook up to a ATU. There was one of the Zygus that has an ATU built right in. And, of course, his was wide open. He could do ham and CB off of it. So, work all the bands, 40 meters and 20 meters and 17. 17 meters is kind of an interesting band, too, to work. I've worked 17 before. So, but something like that would be an interesting radio that I could, you know, kind of carry around and do what I need to do.
Yeah, there's all sort of types of radios that you can use, you know, have a tuner inside, it's already built inside, Troy, and any kind of radio that you have today is going to cost a lot of money for them, but for this kind of radios, because a built-in tuner, but now this radio I got now at HF, it's got built-in tuner, it's a lot cheaper back then than it was now. Now, but they sold this radio today, it cost me a lot more money to pay for what I had to pay for this radio when I did buy it. And the guy that sold it to me from the Eureka Club, he sold it to me for a reasonable price. I mean, I was impressed with the price on it when he sold it to me. He said, Don, anytime you want to sell it back to me, let me know, and I'll buy it back from you. He said, I said, all right, I'll let you know, Chuck. I said, well, all those years since I had this radio, I didn't want to let it go. I would like it so much since day one, since I had the HF when I did. And when you talk about the CPers, when you talk about the certain antenna, what antenna did you use for a CB? And you mentioned about the tuner inside that CB, KC-CBT.
Yeah, it was the Antron 99. Antron 99, and basically that's a vertical, NFED vertical. It's advertised as CB antenna, but you can do 10 meters with it's pretty wideband antenna, actually. And you can get it, with a tuner, you can get it down to 20 meters and work pretty good. If you try to do 40, you can tune it on 40, but it's not efficient enough down on 40. It starts losing its efficiency once you go below 20 meters. But you can get away with doing 20 meters, 17, I've done 15 with it, 12, 11, and 10. So those bands you can do. But honestly, if you're going to do 40 and you want to be portable, you got to have something like a Wolf River coil with an 18-foot width on it, and then you got to adjust your coil for 40. And there's Wolf River coil, there's Predator, there's a few tripod portable antennas. But now this base antenna I've got, it claims it will do 80 meters all the way down to, I think it said 6, but I want to say 8210, though, just to be sure. I think 6 meters would be a stretch, although with a tuner, you probably can get away with it. Because the Antron, I worked 6 meters with that, too. Wasn't meant for 6, but I was able to work 6 meters with that tuner on it. So, you know, you want something to work, it can. You got to do what you got to do, and you don't have the space. I was lucky enough for the landlord in that apartment complex to allow me to do it because luckily there was woods behind my apartment. And so what he allowed me to do was to run coax and bury the coax and put the antenna near a tree where nobody could hardly see it. He said, well, I have a lot of respect for ham radio. He said, I don't have a problem if you do that. You're not hurting anybody. It's out in the woods. No one's really going to see it. And, you know, your coax buried in the ground, you're not bothering nobody. And what I did is I had a piece of board cut out for the coax to go through, and then you shut the window on the board, and you had to run weather stripping because you couldn't close the window all the way. Another way to do it now, they have that flat coax that you can go through, like if there's a gap in your window, you can go through that and then shut the window on the flat coax, and it's got the jacks on each end where you can connect your round coax to, and then you're able to do whatever you got to do. Like I said, there's more than one way to skin a cat when it comes to ham radio. If you got a cool landlord that'll let you do that, but it shouldn't be a problem with one of the tripod antennas, because you just run it through the window or sliding glass door, and then when you're done, just take it down and you're good to go. Nobody's going to complain because you didn't drill no hole.
I got away with that with the landlord years ago. That was okay for a antenna and then a radio in my apartment. So when I was a bachelor back in the day years ago before I married my wife. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady. Anyways, tell you what, I had a problems. I had a couple of guys came out here and set my radio up and my antenna and all that. And the antenna's about 15 feet high, you know, from the telephone pole to the other pole on the other side of someone's backyard. And then it's like a trap triangle to my feed point of the window where it was coming from. And it was one of those flat windows, like you were saying, you put your coax, the coax cable was on the radio. I was using a bell end at the time, and then I had a solder the lateral line to the bell end. It was one of the guys that came over, and then the coax screw on the bell end to the radio. You screw on the radio, on the back of the radio when you did. And the antenna was literally the lateral line. It was the antenna, really. And then you had your wire outside. It was a delta dipole wire that I was using at the time. And I still use it this very day for the HF. And so I got away with that, and the landlord didn't say anything about it. And not mention anything about it at all. So it was okay to put one up in that. And that was a long time ago. It was different landlords that quit, and they come, and they go, you know, so I think they have an idea that maybe they know I'm a ham radio operator. I don't know. I've been here since 1984. That's how long I've been in this apartment. And as much as I have to admit, I mean, the hobby is a hobby. Anybody that enjoys a hobby is not a big nobody. I think I can get away with it. They don't say nothing about it then, you know.
Yeah, Roger on that there, Don. Well, it's hard for a lot of landlords today, though, because a lot of them today don't understand it. I've found, you know, when I went into another apartment, they weren't so open about it. You know, I had one up, you know, you were talking about up north and where I was staying with family and stuff. There was one that when I was staying with family, the landlord wasn't all that keen on it. I got the base antenna. I thought the landlord was going to let me have it up, and they kind of reneged on it, which kind of really upset me a little bit because I already paid the money for the antenna and everything else. But the good thing is I got that flat coax stuff, and I may you know, talk him into at least let me put something up temporarily on a basketball hoop holder and then unclamp it when I'm done, or, you know, for that matter. Yeah, it's one of those things that they probably wouldn't know if I did it at night. Took it down during the daytime or, you know, whatever. Only use it occasionally here and there. What they don't see, they can't complain about. So, you know, if it's not, you know, no holes drilled, nothing that they could see, they can't really complain about it, so that's how I look at it. But worst come to worst, to get an HT and that does HF, and I'm able to go to some park somewhere and or just go outside and use it and make contacts that way, or even when I'm in the vehicle. So that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. And if they get that those hams that are doing that work on that Quanshang, which is normally a VHF UHF rig, but it's an SDR type radio, and they did a hack on it, and they changed the hardware so that it wasn't generating harmonics. And they posted it on YouTube, and they said they got a hold of the manufacturer and told them how they did it. And I made a comment. I told them, I said, if you could tell me where I can get one of them radios already done, I'm interested in buying it. I'd buy the radio already modified if they're willing to do one for me and sell it to me. So see what I'm just waiting now to see what they say about it.
It's good, Troy. Hopefully you get that. It's always good to try something different to your interest of desiring some other radio that you would look forward to have in your own hands and that when you do get it, when at the time when you do get it. And, ham radio operators and ham people like us that have licenses to operate, have those privileges, Troy. Landlords, no matter who it is, they should not make a big deal about it, about ham operators like us to do what we want to do for our hobbies. Because it's a hobby we worked hard for and study for it, and we got license because of those privileges. Now we got license, we can work those bands that we can work because we have those privileges to do that, you know. And I have to say this much, I've been a ham for many years now. I think it was back in 1996 when I got my license issued. Yeah, I think 96 or 97, I can't remember which, but it was a long time ago. And I was sick of death when I passed my tech. And no matter what, when anyone said, I said, you know what? I mean, you could be a CB-er and do all what contacts you want, but you know what? The thing of it is about being a CB-er was this as good as being a CB-er like I was at one time. You could change into a ham operator too, you know. You just have to take your tests and get your license from the SEC and yeah, there you go. You know, you're ready to go again. Bands, you know. Some guy told me, well, his name was Walt. He passed away. Poor guy. He was a nice guy. He was a clerk at the USICA meetings. That every time we had a meeting, he was in the kitchen cooking for everybody. That was a dinner for everybody that he prepared for everybody. He said, put your hands on a band. And he says, put the fire to the wire. As he said, you know.
Yeah, Roger on that. Well, to be honest with you, I operate both services. I still do CB. You know, I don't have a problem with CB radio. There's been good people I talk on there, too, with. You know, you get some people that act like a clown, but when they do that, I, you know, go somewhere else. But I enjoy both services. They both have their use. And to be honest with you, if it hadn't have been for CB, I wouldn't be talking on ham radio now. So, you know, they both have their use. I guess now the new CB is GMRS. A lot of the people that just want to talk local and don't want to do skip, they've been doing GMRS. And mostly, what I've heard on the 11-meter band is people that shoot skip, kind of like me, skip shooting. Every once in a while you'll hear local, but I hear mostly, you know, people that do skip. And usually, to be honest, channel 28 AM is pretty active, and then your sideband frequency is 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. And then you got your free band, 415 to, I think it's 27,600, 27,700. I don't know why they don't open it up in the United States. everywhere else, even Brazil's, they use the same channels we do, from 1 to 40, and then 41 on up to 80, they use for sideband. They finally allowed FM on CB, but what the FCC should have done was open up some of them frequencies that they don't use for anything, like some of the channels below 1, like 26805, 26... a lot of people are using FM down on 26805, but what they could have done is they could open up those channels for FM, some of the channels below 1, and then make 41 all the way up to 80, like it is in Brazil and everywhere else, make that sideband. Or better yet, just make it open with VFO, open the 11-meter band up, and just do it VFO. That would have been cool, but you know, you still got the AMers that don't know too much. So what I say is, what they should have done is just made 41 on up, 415 on up, make that sideband only, and then the ones that are below 36, from 1 to 35 should have, you know, that could be AM. That's how they should have done it.
Yeah, you were saying all from the beginning, when you were saying, when you were 11-meter operator, Detroit, and I have to say this about things I don't like to hear. And I don't care to talk to the individual like that, because the way they're hailing and the way they abuse CD back in the day when they had, the way they talk, though, I myself, you know, I have to say this once, you know, there's a lot of restrictions about that, you know, being a ham operator. And I like CB too myself. And that's how I got started as a ham operator, when I found out about ham operator, because if it wasn't for CB, I think I wouldn't know nothing about ham radio when I walked in a Radio Shack one day, and that's why I found out about it a long time ago. And a salesman told me about it, and I told him, what kind of radio is that? Yeah, CB, it looked like a CB. He said, no. He said, that's a ham radio. Ham radio handheld. I said, really? I said, what do you got to do to get that? Well, you got to have a license, he says, from the FCC. You got to go through the class for 8 weeks, and then you take your technician test. I said, oh, okay. And that's how I got started as ham, you know. And he told me all about that, and all the information that I didn't know about as a ham operator, that salesman. That's how I knew about ham radio.
Yeah, roger on that. Roger on that there, Don. Yeah, I remember the old book from Radio Shack. It was called From 5 Watts to 5,000 Watts. I don't know why they called it 5,000 Watts, because the maximum power that you're allowed to do on ham officially is 1,500. Although, again, you get people that, you know, we don't talk about, that might do more, but 1,500 watts is plenty. In fact, 100 watts is plenty, or 200 watts is plenty. I've made a lot of contacts just running straight 100 watts. I never really got into running big gobs of power like that. You know, when you start running mega wattage like that, you stand a greater chance of interfering with something, especially if you live in the city. I always tell people, you know, I don't go crazy lunatic over running gobs of power, because that's where the problems start. So if you can just do the conditions and have a good antenna and a well-tuned radio and run, you know, at the most a couple hundred watts, you're doing good. You're doing real good. I had, to be honest with you, when I was doing CB 11-meter, there was a sideband walkie-talkie that Radio Shack had. I'd gotten hold of it when I was younger, quite a bit younger, and then somebody stole it from me. I had to modify it, put a fan on it, because the it got warm after I talked on it for a while. It got real warm, especially because I like to do sideband more than anything. And that radio would get warm. Well, I took it to a CB shop. I think it might have been Don's Truck Stop at the time, because that's when they were selling CB equipment there. And the guy there was really knowledgeable back in the day. And I had him put a fan on it, modified the case a little bit, put a fan in that radio to keep it cool, and I was able to carry on contacts without getting so warm that it almost burnt my hand. You know what I'm saying?
Something like that to happen, you know, when it's so hot like that. You got to probably fry an egg on it if you wanted to, right, Troy? Anyways, well, the equipments do get hot, and they do have fans. You know, when I bought this power supply, I don't know, I felt that how hot it was yesterday. I think they have a fan built to the side that cools it off every now and then. And it gets hot and it cools it off, just like the radios do. It gets cool off, you got fans built to the side of them. It's like my HF rig gets to the fan inside that, automatically it just comes on. And I literally sit up down here, come on. You know, and you can hear it blowing, you know, inside that radio when it does. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. It gets pretty hot, the radios, when you play with them, you know.
Well, if you want a real powerful power supply, I've got one. I'm trying to get rid of because I don't run a massive amount of power, but this power supply doesn't even really get warm when you run it with just a regular radio. Problem is, I've got it up north, and you know, up there towards Ludington. That's where it's at. So, but I'm trying to get some money out of it because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to save up for a portable HF radio. I mean, I would even be willing, if someone had one of those Albright radios, that $29.90 that did 10, 11, and 12 meters and did sidebands, I would be willing to trade, or even the like I said, the Zygoo, if they had one that was open where I could do even do 11 meters on it, and I could put it, I could operate it, you know, in my hand or put it in the vehicle. I know that Zygoo 6100, I've seen that on YouTube, and I thought that was pretty cool. They have a radio, I wish I had the money for it. It's the Lab 599 Manpack. Lab 599, the TX500 MP. That radio already comes fully open, and you could put a telescopic antenna on it. It's got a BNC connector on there. You can put a telescopic antenna that's got a coil where you can adjust it for, like, the bands that you go to. And plus, it's got a tuner on the radio, so built-in tuner. So it's one of those radios you can carry around, like an HD. But they want darn near $2,000 for that radio, all because it's portable and can do all the bands. And it might take me a while to get that kind of money, but boy, I'll tell you, I've been really wanting that radio for quite some time. If I could get my hands on it, but, you know, if I could sell that power supply and just get the Pyramid 30-amp power supply, would be big enough for what I do. But I've got that 70-amp power supply, the Astron, and I'll tell you, that thing is a beast. But I will tell you, it's a backbreaker, so if you ever planned on getting it from me, hope that you got a good back or somebody that can also help you, because that's how I ended up being crippled for 7 months. I ended up in the emergency room, and I was crippled for 7 months where my right leg stopped working because I tried to carry that power supply. So word to the wise on that one.
KCCPT 5D. Yeah, roger that there, Tori. I tell you, felt like a pretty heavy power supply. I mean, you could tell the weight on that power supply that you were trying to carry, and it really did you pretty hard on your legs, man, and not capable to avoid that from that when you have a problem with your leg. And hopefully everything's for you right now that your legs are healed and all that because of that reason. Hopefully it has been healed. And anyways, thank you for the offer, but I do got two power supplies. I have accumulated a lot of equipment through the years, so that's been ham, Troy. And I got one power supply. All the equipment, most of the equipment is at my mother-in-law's house upstairs in the closet. When I had all that equipment, I have other radios besides the radio I got on HL. I got, I don't know, a few handhelds and a few other radios I got too besides HF. And all that's in the storage of the of my mother-in-law's house upstairs in the closet still. And I have a power supply in there. And it also is a pyramid power supply, as far as I know. And I think it's what it's called, pyramid power supply. And I had to get that fixed because the little batteries, some round little batteries, I think they were burned out. I had to get four of them installed, and some guy knew about that, and he got the, he ordered those, I think the batteries, or I don't know what they were, and he installed them in, and the power supply worked just great after he got done with it. And he gave it back to him, and I paid him whatever it was that it cost, you know, from the price of it when he got done with it. And I think that was a pyramid, and it's a pretty good power supply. And the one I got now, it's pretty good too. It's small, and it's not heavy. The other one's a little heavier than that one, but it's not heavy as what you're talking about. The one that you're talking about, that power supply that you have already, no, it's not as big as. Probably twice the size of both of them, and the other one that I have at the pyramid is twice the size as this one, but it's not that big. You can carry it with your hands. That's how small it is. So it's not big as what you're talking about, the one you have now. But thank you for the offer. I appreciate it. And anyways, I can go with what I have right now. You know, the power supply I have right now, it does very well.
W8CBT
from Kilo Oscar 4, Romeo Oscar Yankee. Yeah. Well, the reason I mentioned it, you said your power supply got too hot, and this one here doesn't. It stays cool. It, like I said, it can handle all the way up to 70 amps, so, you know, it takes quite a bit to get up to 70 amps. Most radios at 100 watts, at the most, you're only doing about 25 amps at the most transmit. And so if you get a 30-amp power supply, you got enough headroom in there to handle that. The pyramid I was looking at, I think it was sold for like $40 or something like that. And it was small enough that you could hold in your hand. It's got the terminals for the regular, like the car terminals that you hook up with the fuse on it. And then it's got the cigarette lighter socket on it, too. So if you had a radio that had one of them cigarette lighter things, you could use that onto it on the pyramid that I was looking at. That'd probably be good enough for me, but... I just got to see what I can get my hands on. You know, if I can get something handheld as far as radio, that would be great. That's what I'm trying to strive for, because just the way that my lifestyle is and stuff. When I travel and stuff, I want to be able to take the radio too. And when I go from place to place and stuff like that with my... But yeah, the my leg, as far as the healing went, I'm not 100% the way I used to be, but it took me about 7 months to where I could even go up a hill without a cane. But every once in a while, like if I go down a steep hill or up a steep hill, it gets a little wonky a little bit. I can't do it very often. And then, like, if I walk around, like, let's say a Meijer or something like that, doing groceries for, like, a couple hours, after about an hour or so, it gets kind of wonky. It starts to want to give out. So it really messed me up. It messed up my knees and messed up. I had the sciatic nerve in the back, you know, caused from it. So it's, and then plus it messed, you know, just trying to lift it, it messed up my legs pretty bad. But I didn't know that I had osteoarthritis too. So that, and it exacerbated a condition that I started having, but, and it meant when the legs stopped working, it was bad because, Some folks that I hung around with, they couldn't understand why all of a sudden I wasn't able to walk. And they thought maybe I was playing a joke on them, but no, I wasn't. And I asked to be taken to the hospital. It didn't happen as soon as I lifted the power supply. My back started hurting, and it started getting worse and worse and worse. And so I had to, get treatment for it. So it's not one of those things that happened as soon as I did it. It's kind of weird that way.
Troy, it's big when you have a problem and you have situations that you find out later on that you could walk because of that power supply that caused the complications of your walking ability. And I'm sorry to hear that. Anyways, I have a hard time walking myself. I had an accident years ago with my car accident. And it was very severe. I hit a semi-truck, and I thank the Lord for that. I could have been a goner. I had my foot underneath the gas pedal, and for some reason, it twisted my ankle, and I have arthritis since day one. And all the years I had that problem, I still have problems walking on that same foot. And it seems like it goes one direction, and I end up bumping in the wall or hitting something with that foot or something like that. And that's why I walk funny now, because of that reason. And I think it has to do with old age, too. I'll be 65 this year on July 2nd. I'll be getting my Medicare, all right. Well, anyways, I'm retired. I've been retired 3 years now, Troy. I'm not sure if you're able to work. I know some people can, and let me tell you something there, Troy. I'm blind in one eye. I have a prosthetic eye, and I thank God I have the eye. I'm capable of seeing out of still. And I do wear glasses, though, you know, because I found out that life was not so bad after I got older. You know, I had to get used to adjusting that one eye, and now I can see 20/20 that one eye because I used it so much and so many times that I had see out of that one eye, and I feel like I had see out 20/20 out of that eye because of that reason, because I'm so used to one eye all the years since I was a kid. It wouldn't have happened when I was just a little boy. And that's why I'm so used to seeing out of that eye, out of that one eye, and, because of the 20/20 vision I have. But anyways, that was a long time ago. And I thank God that, you know, it wasn't worse than it was. But anyways, Troy, I'll make this my last round, and I'll say 73s to you, my friend, and you take care, and nice to hear you. Good signal all the way through, and I have to admit here, full quiety in the repeater. So you take care, and God bless you. KCPT. I'll be clear on your final there, Troy.
All right, very good there, Don. KC8CBT from Kilo Oscar 4, Romeo Oscar Yankee. Yeah, maybe we'll run into each other again. Sounds like you and I got about the same issues. I'm totally blind out of one eye. I can see just light perception occasionally out of the right eye, but the left eye, I have tunnel vision, and it's 20 over 100. What's this? 20 over 200, I think it is. I think that's B vision. What a person can see at 200 feet, I have to see at 20. So, and I use like magnifying glass to read print and or large print. With the computer, I use a magnifying program to make the print bigger on the computer, and then I'm able to do what I do. But I'm able to get, you know, I don't work either, not anymore. Cause my disability with that and the hypersomnia, borderline narcolepsy, that's an issue too. So I can fall asleep at the drop of a hat. So it's that's another disability that I've got on top of it. So it's a challenge, but you know, I get around as best I can and enjoy life to the fullest. And God is good. And sorry to hear about the car accident, but God is good. Thank God that you're still able to do things that you do. So it could be a lot worse. Anyway, Don, I'll let you go ahead and sign off here, and I'll try to program the rest of the frequencies in, and you might hear me on here from time to time, you know, in the Lansing area here. KCHCBT, this is Kilo Oscar 4, Romeo Oscar Yankee, 73s, and stay safe. God bless you, too.
Thank you, Troy. 73s for now, and you take care of it, my friend. God bless you. It's been nice to talk to you. KCHCBT, I'll be out.
W8CMN, Repeater Flint.